Well, we had a tremendous meeting. I know that all of you who had a part in it enjoyed it thoroughly. I don't know when I've enjoyed a meeting more, or have I been a part of one that I felt did more good. I just believe that it was a great blessing. The circumstances didn't look good to me. I felt a bit queasy about it. The students were off on spring break, and you just came in. You see, some of you didn't get here till Monday. The meeting began on Sunday morning, and I didn't know what would happen, but Gary brought such very practical and sound and biblical lessons that the momentum began to gain, and we just had one of the best ones that we could have had. And I'm thankful for that, and I've thanked the Lord often for that good meeting. I know you have too. A lot of good things are happening. At the early hour, Wayne Keller and his son Steve presided over the Lord's table and exhorted us. That's a victory. If those of you who know Steve Keller, he's coming on strong, and they stood back to back there today. And I just thought if we had all the fathers and their sons who are standing side by side and back to back in the service to the Lord, if we could have them all stand, that would be a great witness. But boys don't usually sit with their dads. You know how that is. They usually want to be over somewhere else. But that's all right as far as space. But when they stand right together, side by side, and serving Christ, that's one of the most outstanding witnesses. And we're seeing that here just multiply. And I think it's a great strengthening of the church. Well, we're coming to a time of year that we come to every year in this college community. And there's a certain characteristic about this time of the year. It's not restricted to just the college community. The entire community at large experiences it also. And there's a certain quality that permeates this time of the year, but not just this time of the year. The whole of our year is permeated by this particular quality. I want to see if you can recognize what I'm talking about. Now visualize with me, if you will, student, sitting up in the bed in the middle of the night, cold sweat pop out on his forehead, a sickening feeling in his stomach as he realizes that he's been in school now for 3 months this semester, and for the first time he realizes that tomorrow the term paper is due. Now, boy, you talk about panic. Or he happens to knock over a set of books and a stack of books, and there's a book lying there that is the textbook for a course he enrolled in 3 months earlier, and he forgot all about the course and tomorrow's final exams. That's bad news. Add to that spring sing. A guy told me yesterday, he said, we're supposed to present this to Jack Ryan Tuesday, and we hadn't even started. We're not there yet. Bad news. Well, here's something this the teachers will understand. Teacher evaluation week. Oh, that's hard. That's hard on these teachers. When you go in there and write out what you think about them. Or here's another example of it. Trying to get out on Race Street on Friday afternoon. And to double that, you're sitting behind one of these precious, cautious lady drivers. That's hopeless. I just have to. Or mamas who are trying to get all the family ready to go to church on time. Now that's really, it just does something to you. She's in there just running here, there, and yonder, combing this one's hair, getting this one to brush its teeth, feeding breakfast to three or four children. And Dad is feeling it too. He's out in the car blowing the horn. We've just got all manner of things that happen. What's common? What's the common denominator among all these instances that we've been talking about? What is the one word that's the common denominator? What is it? Huh? Come on. Stress. It's stress. And none of us is exempt from it. How do you handle it? How do you handle it? You've got yours, I've got mine. And you either handle it or it handles you. And it's not very gentle when it handles you. One old black brother, about 105 years old, somebody asked him one day, to what do you attribute your long life? And he said, well, whenever I works hard. And whenever I sits loose. And whenever I worries, I goes to sleep. Now, see, he had learned how to cope with stress. How do you cope with it? Or do you cope with it? If you don't, and research has shown recently that as much as 20% of the college age population at some time or other during its career becomes completely immobilized by stress. Your grade point average has to be a certain level or else you won't get into graduate school. And all of these pressures of expectations that you place on yourself, plus the ones that your parents perhaps place on you, plus those that graduate school places on you, plus all of these things coming in, and it produces stress. Now, you either handle it or it handles you. If it handles you, you can expect to be impatient with others as well as yourself. You can expect to be fatigued. You can expect to be irritable. You can expect to be unable to relax. You'll find yourself in what they call the roadrunner syndrome, looking at your watch about 10 times every 5 minutes, and then somebody asks you, what time is it? And you have to go and look at your watch again. You don't know. It's just a habit, you know, looking at your watch. And you're rushing here and you're rushing there. You're doing too much in too little time. You've only got 8 weeks left now. And you're supposed to have 4-term papers already well in the making, but you haven't. And if you let pressure and stress get to you enough, it's going to lead to hypertension, to ulcers, to heart trouble. It's going to lead to insomnia. You're not going to be able to concentrate. You're not going to be able to do much of anything because stress has gotten to you. Would you believe that one of the points of temptation that Jesus experienced, and he experienced them all, Hebrews 4:15 says that he was tempted in all points like we are. Would you believe that one of the points of temptation that he experienced was that of pressure? Hebrews 5:7 says that with strong cryings and tears, he appealed to him who was able to save him from death. That represents pressure. Jesus was not exempt from it. It was real to him. And it's real to you. I think probably we need to distinguish between what we would call stress and what we would call strategy. There's such a thing as strategy, and there ought to be in your life, there better be, and there's such a thing as stress. Jesus had strategy as well as stress. He had stress as well as strategy. Let me define strategy. Strategy is that course of action that you plan well in advance of the thing itself. It starts at the beginning of the semester. Your strategy is that which you lay down as your, that's what you're going to lay down as your program. The first week, I'm going to get all my books together on the theme. The second week, I'm going to get my note cards and get them all written. By the fourth week, I'll have it all outlined. And by the fifth week, I'll be well into the way of writing it. The seventh week, I can have it all typed up. The eighth week, I'll lay it on the professor's desk 6 weeks before the time is due. That's strategy. That's insanity, frankly. You know better than that. But anyway, what I'm saying is you plan it all in advance. That's strategy. Jesus had that very kind, except his was reality. You see his strategy come out in John 2 when he said to his mother, when she wanted him to perform a sign, he said, my hour has not yet come. He had it all programmed out like it was going to be. He rearranged it there, but nevertheless, he had a strategy. Later on, one of his friends, and I'm surprised whenever I read this, there was a Pharisee or some of the Pharisees who were called his friends, came to Jesus one day and said, Jesus, you better get out of here. Herod's trying to kill you. And Jesus said, you go tell that fox that I'm going to perform cures and cast out demons today and tomorrow and the third day after. But he said, I must go on my way and do about my business today and tomorrow and the third day. And then he says, it isn't right that a prophet should perish out of Jerusalem. But the thing I'm pointing out is that he just simply laid it out today and tomorrow and the third day, and I'm going to be doing this and that and that, and then I'll be crucified. He had his strategy. Strategy is also seen in the fact that whenever in John 11, it got so that he could not go around among the Jews. It just simply says in verse 54 that he left Jerusalem and would not walk among the Jews anymore, took his disciples, went over either beyond the Jordan or to a little community just west of the Jordan, I forget which, and it says he stayed there with them. Now, all of that strategy. But what about the stress in his life? How did he handle that? And there was real stress in his life. When things began to come in on him, when the momentum of the process of his execution began to pick up, it began to increase, and the tensions began to mount. And when it seems that things were beginning to cave in on him, and what did he do and how did he handle it? Earlier in his life, in his ministry, you began to sense this tension beginning to build. Luke says that he was on his way to Jerusalem, the 9th chapter, and he had his mind, or he said he had his face set toward Jerusalem. He came to a town in Samaria. They misinterpreted his intense gaze or his preoccupation with what was ahead of him. They misinterpreted it. They thought it was bigotry. And so when they saw that he had his mind or his face set toward Jerusalem, they didn't receive him. But that wasn't bigotry. He was just beginning to be preoccupied with what was ahead of him. Later on, we find him becoming obsessed in John the 12th chapter with the same thing. This was beginning to build from Luke the 9th chapter on through until we finally come to about 3 days before he was crucified. On the Wednesday, probably before of that very week, it says that Jesus, it doesn't say that, but the whole chapter from about verse 20 of John 12 on down through 31 shows Jesus, if not becoming irrational, and I've said that at times, and perhaps I need to apologize to the Lord, but what I'm saying is simply this. The answers that he gave didn't match the questions that were asked. There were two or three questions asked from John 12, 20 through 31. Two or three questions. One is that somebody wants to see you, Lord. Another one is, we hear that the Christ is to abide forever. What do you mean lifted up? And every time, Jesus answered those questions with answers that weren't even pertinent. Had nothing to do with the question. And every time he gave an answer, you know what it centered on? On his death. He kept talking about his death. They said, somebody wants to see you. He said, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it abides by itself alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. If any man would follow me or would serve me, he must follow me, that where I am, there may my servant be also. And then he went on and just simply said how much he was hurting. Well, nobody was talking about that. But his mind was on it. He was preoccupied with it. And then 31b, John 12, 31b makes this statement. After he had said this, it says he went away from them and hid. Did you know that was in the Bible? Did you know that that was in the Bible? That he went away and hid from them? Did you ever feel like that? Did you ever feel, for example, so preoccupied and so that your mind was so on something that you couldn't really, you weren't able to concentrate on what people were saying, they were walking along with you, you just had something that you had to do, and you were going over there to do it? Did you ever have that kind of stress? Why, yeah. Did you ever have the kind of stress that is so pressing on you that really you don't answer questions? People ask you a question and you say, yeah, but did you think about this? And your mind is so on something else that's so pressing on you that questions just are irrelevant. Did you ever feel like running away and hiding at final exam time? Yeah. Well, Jesus knows how you feel. The final exam time was coming to him. And he understands. He understands how you feel. Because he also himself went away and hid. But he regrouped, he came back, and began to make one last appeal. But what I'm showing you today is that Jesus was, He was under stress. His strategy was one thing, and he had worked it all out, and he was at ease with that. But when the thing came right on him, he was not a robot. It was not something that he could just say, well, I've already planned it like this, and that's the way it is. You know, this man sweat blood. He sweat as though it were drops of blood. He cried. The tension and the pressure became so great. How did he handle it? Well, let me show you two things that he didn't do. He didn't resort to retaliation. Simon Peter mentions this in 1 Peter 2:22. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. You know, one of the most often used measures of relieving our tension and getting out from under our pressure is that we retaliate either to the people who are exerting the pressure on us, or to people who are innocent bystanders, a wife or our children. They hadn't even got anything to do with it. We take it out on them. Jesus wouldn't do that. I suspect Simon Peter, when he said that when he suffered, he didn't threaten. I think probably, and when he said when he didn't retaliate, I suspect that he had in mind that night when Jesus was betrayed, and whenever the thieves, or the people who came, then I say the thief, Judas, and the men that were with him came to arrest him. Simon Peter pulled his sword and cut off the ear of Malchus, the servant of the high priest, cut his ear off. Jesus said, Peter, put your sword up. Those that take it will die by it. Or perhaps Peter had in mind what he said when he was hanging on the cross, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Maybe that's what he meant when he said when he suffered, he didn't threaten. He didn't retaliate. But that's one thing that he didn't do. So many times we do. How do you handle stress? Jesus didn't handle it by retaliating. Something else he didn't do. Under stress, Jesus didn't resort to drugs. Do you realize that the Bible mentions that he did not resort to drugs? And yet are you aware of the fact, and I know you are, that one of the escapes that so many people, even on this campus, resort to in times of stress is drugs. Jesus wouldn't do that. In Mark, the 15th chapter, it says that, I want you to turn there if you have your Bibles, if you want to see it. Mark, the 15th chapter, and verse 22. They brought him to a place called Golgotha, which means a place of a skull. Look at Mark 15:23 now. And they offered him wine mingled with myrrh, but he didn't take it. I'd always thought that this was, you know, there were two, they offered him vinegar later. This was wine mixed with myrrh. They offered him vinegar on the top of a reed. They stuck it up to his lips or tried to, and somebody said, let him alone. Let's see if Elijah will come get him. This was done before he was even crucified. They offered him wine mingled with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided his garments among them. They gave him this before they crucified him. Do you know why? It wasn't any gesture of kindness on their part. I checked into this. Myrrh is a strong sedative. It's kind of like a Mickey Finn that knocks a person out, but it wasn't for his concern that they were doing it or that they wanted him to take it. They gave this to those who were crucified in order that they might be easily handled. It would sedate them so that they could get them on the cross and get them in place, and then it would wear off, and then they could suffer. But Jesus wouldn't even let this be used. When he tasted it, he was going to drink it, but when he tasted it, he must have either spit it out, but it says he refused to drink it. He didn't resort to drugs. Well, what did he do? How did he handle stress? There's a pattern of behavior that indicates the way that he did it. Number one, is he exercised? Now, here again, you may think, well, why in the world do you get that? Do you realize how much this man walked? He walked everywhere he went. There's only one reference to where Jesus didn't walk. He rode a donkey into Jerusalem from Bethany into Jerusalem, a place about 2 miles, maybe a mile and a half. But everywhere else he walked. In John 4, it says he had walked so far that he was wearied with the journey. Hot, walking with these men. There they were trooping down these roads. Before his baptism, he walked from Nazareth down to where John was baptizing toward Jerusalem. You know how far it was? 60 miles. A few days after he was baptized, after the 40-day temptation in the wilderness, a few days after that, he walked back 60 miles. You say, are you sure he didn't ride? No, I'm not sure. But everywhere we have any reference, we have a reference to him walking. Do you know how good walking is for mental stress? One of the best things you can do is to walk. There's an article here that Richard Duke gave me. I found, listen to what it says. Exercise is one of the best ways to relieve the pressures caused by job stress, says Dr. George Williams, director of the Institute of Health Research, San Francisco. Another man says, who is a medical director for Prudential Insurance, asserts that physical fitness serves as a sort of inoculation against stress. Jesus walked everywhere he went. He was always walking. And I don't think he did it say, now I've got to get out here and get my exercise in for the day. He didn't have to do that. There wasn't any other way to get much where you were going except walk. You could ride a mule, I guess, but he just simply chose to walk. But it kept him physically fit. We won't even walk across campus. You cats that have wheels and you come from the campus up here, many of you won't even walk to church. You ought to drive. Go get your wheels so that, you know, you don't want to get too much exercise. It might put you in physical fitness, and you don't want to do that. But back there they walked. Did it do him any good? Yes, I think it did. He was a man who was raised as a carpenter. Physical fitness was a part of that. He was a man that walked wherever he went. Physical fitness is the name of the game. And on you go. I don't know how many miles a day he would walk. How many do you think he would have walked? I don't know. But he'd got his physical exercise. He stayed in good physical shape. But something else that he did to handle stress, he talked to his friends about it. He didn't keep it bottled up inside him. In Luke, the 12th chapter, there's a statement made there where Jesus said, I have come to cast fire on the earth, and how I would that it were accomplished. And he made another statement immediately after that. He says, I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how I wish it were over. How I wish it were over. Now, he said this to his friends. On still another occasion, he took the 12 aside in Luke, the 18th chapter. It begins to build now, and he's talking to them more and more about what's happening. Luke 18:31. And taking the 12, he said to them, Behold, we're going up to Jerusalem, and everything that's written of the Son of Man by the prophets will be accomplished. For he'll be delivered to the Gentiles and will be mocked and shamefully treated and spit upon. They will scourge him and kill him. He talked about it. And I've just picked two or three. There are others where many times he talked with them about this that was going to happen. He would stop them along the road and says, Look, we're going up to Jerusalem. I'm going to be killed. And then there was an inner circle in Mark, the 14th chapter. He took Peter and James and John the last night of his life before he was crucified. And about verse 32, it says, They went to a place which is called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, Sit here while I pray. But he took Peter and James and John and went with them a bit further and made this statement to them, My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch. And he let these men on the inner circle be aware of what was on the inside. I wonder how many times he would sit with those men and talk to them about what was happening. From the gist and the drift of the Gospels, you find that more and more he would share with these men and talk to them, talking to his friends. He didn't keep it bottled up inside him. Question, what happens when friends don't understand? And what happens when they can't be depended on? And his friends didn't understand. After in Luke 18, where he said, I'm going to Jerusalem, I'm going to be killed, it says they didn't understand what he was saying. They couldn't grasp it. Did you ever have friends that just couldn't understand what you were talking about? You were going through some trauma, some stress that was so maybe unique to you that they just couldn't understand. They'd sit there and listen, but you could tell by the look on the face, they never had been through it. Perhaps you're going through a divorce, or your family's breaking up, or there's just stress in your home, and you go to talk to somebody whose family is all together and all, they can't really understand what you're talking about. And what if they can't really be dependent on to stick with you right to the end? Well, Jesus' disciples couldn't. When Jesus came back to the 8 who were there, and came back to Peter, James, and John, and after going forward and praying and sweating blood as though it were drops of blood, he came back, and you know what they were doing? They were sound asleep. Sound asleep. He said, "Peter, get up. Can't you watch with me for 1 hour?" And it says, Peter, they didn't know what to say. When you're awakened out of your sleep, you know, sound, they just didn't know what to say. Peter must have been asleep if he didn't know what to say. Or if he didn't know what, if he didn't say, he never did really know what to say, but he knew what, he always tried. But he just, there wasn't anything they could say. They just sat there dumbfounded. And then Mark records that they all left him and fled. Friends. Well, he turned to friends and talked to them a lot. And when the stress was upon him and as it increased, he talked to his friends. But what did he do then when they failed? Well, it was not then that he did it, but all through his personal ministry, we find him going to his father. Going to his father. Do you remember whenever that memorable event took place in Mark the 6th chapter and in John the 6th chapter, when the feeding of the 5,000? That was a potential revolutionary uprising. That's all you can conclude. There were 5,000 men that had run around the north side of the Sea of Galilee when they saw Jesus and his disciples going across in the boat. They ran around over there, got there, and were waiting when Jesus came. And he defused that thing. John says they were coming to take him and make him king by force. They'd been dilly-dallying long enough. There was an uprising in the making. They were there as revolutionaries. Jesus came that close to not being able to stop it. He forced his disciples to get into the boat. The stress was upon him. He says, "You get in the boat and get out of here." He then dismissed the crowd. And it says he went up into the hills and prayed. That was a close call. He almost wasn't able to do it, perhaps. It seems that there was this stress upon him. And then those numerous occasions all during his personal ministry when his disciples would find him out early in the morning. A great while before day, it says, out there praying. Getting his head together, getting it all sorted out. And he said, "Let's go. I've got to preach other places too." But he was out there praying, always praying to his Father. When his friends, on the last night, when they left him, or when he went on beyond them a bit and left them there to watch Peter and James and John, and he went on, it says, a little ways farther, and he fell on his face and he began to pray. Listen to this statement. It's in Mark. He began and he said, "Abba, Daddy, Abba, Father, all things are possible to you. There's not anything you can't do. Take this cup away from me." That was his prayer. "Daddy, please, there's not anything you can't do. Take this cup away." That's what John meant, or that's what Jesus meant when John recorded in John the 16th chapter, whenever he told his disciples, he said, "The hour is coming." In fact, he says, "It's already here, when you're going to all leave me and you're going to go to your homes and you're going to leave me by myself." But he says, "I'm not by myself. My Father is with me." And don't think that he didn't use him. He went there and he found solace, he found comfort, he found help in that association with his Father. And something else, and finally, the fourth thing. He exercised, he got good exercise, he stayed in good physical condition. He talked to his friends about it. He didn't keep it bottled up inside him. Third, he reached for a higher power. He went to his own Father. And then he left it with him. He left it there. This is what Simon Peter meant in that reference in 1 Peter 2:22 and 3, when he says that when he suffered, he didn't threaten, but he committed it to him who judges justly. Did you ever know what that meant? He committed it to him. It just meant he turned it over to him. He'd done all he could do. He had prayed with strong cryings and tears to him that was able to save him. And he says he was heard for that godly fear. But Peter says that after he had done this, he simply committed it to him who judges right. He knew God was going to do what was right. He had that confidence in his Father. So not only did he go to his Father, he took it there and he left it with his Father. Now let me ask you a question. How do you handle stress? Do you stay physically fit? Look, when all these things are coming in on you and you just feel like you're going to come apart, you know, at the seams, and you don't think that there's anything that can be done, may I give a suggestion? Go out and play a game of handball or racquetball, if you can get a court. You better call. Sure enough. Or if you can't get a racquetball court, go over here on the court, on the track and run, or risk your life and run along these streets here. Somebody's liable to clip you, but go on. You're going to go one way or the other. The stress is going to kill you if you don't break that. So get some physical exercise. That's one thing. And find you some friends to talk to. I don't mean necessarily a whole group, but just go sit down with somebody that, and just say, you know, I am really feeling the pressure of this test. Can you give me any help? And you'll find that, by the way, there'll be somebody that probably can. When they fail you, you know, and they say, well, man, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know. All through that, go to your Father and just say, Lord, it's beyond me. I don't know what to do. I've done this and I've done that. And I'm doing the best I can, but it's terribly difficult right now. But the key then is this fourth one. Let him have it. Just let him have it. Take it there and leave it. Like Jesus did when he said, Father, take this cup away from me, but not my will. Thine be done. And it was then after that that Simon cut the person's ear off. And Jesus said, Peter, put your sword up. Shall I not drink the cup that the Father has given me? You see, he'd already settled it. He'd asked for it to be removed. He had been told it cannot be removed. So he just simply said, well, it's yours. Your will be done. And he came out and said, the Father has given me a cup to drink. Put your sword up. I'm going to drink it. And so he did. This is how Jesus handled stress. And he was successful. He went into that garden really trembling. While he was there, he prayed three times, take the cup away. Luke says he sweat drops as though it were drops of blood. He was under in the throes of this of the stress and the trauma and the tribulation of this impending doom, it seemed, this death on a cross. Boy, when he came out of there, he wasn't trembling. The third time he came back, he said, okay, here they come. Get up, boys. There they come. Look at them. Here come our enemies. And coming through those olive trees was Judas and that bunch with lanterns and staves and swords. And they came there, and he said, who do you want? Now watch, if you want to see stress dealt with, watch this. The man that was under stress and didn't know how to deal with it, he'd been gone a long time before this. When they came, he watched them come and stood there, and they came up, and he said, who do you want to see? They said, Jesus of Nazareth. He said, I'm he. Whew. Then the stress was on them. They backed up. I think probably just they thought he could. They had seen him do things that made them know that he could have knocked them into the middle of next week. And they, when he said, I'm Jesus, I think they fully expected him just to do something like that. But they just backed up, and I think they stepped on each other's feet, and they all just fell like a bunch of dominoes. It says they all fell to the ground. And he said, I said, who are you looking for? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. He said, I told you I'm he. If you want me, come get me. I'm here. Let these others go. So they did. They shackled him and led him away. But he went away a victor. He went away successful. He had handled the stress. And he went to the cross with victory. And he died with victory. And he arose with victory. And he could say to them in the midst of all this, look, I'm going to give you peace. Not stress, but peace. He says, in the world you have stress. In me you have peace. You have no stress. I want to close by reading something that Rudyard Kipling said that has a bearing on it. If you can keep your head when all about you're losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet triumph and disaster and treat these two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop down and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on the turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they're gone, and so hold on when there's nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And what's more, you'll be a man, my son. Now, he was talking there about dealing with stress. Can you deal with it? Jesus could and did. And he offers you the same plan. Simon Peter, in that passage we read in 1 Peter chapter 1, or chapter 2, he says he left you an example that you ought to follow in his steps. Who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. When he suffered, he didn't threaten. He didn't retaliate, but he committed himself to who judges justly. May God bless us as we approach these stressful times. Keep physically fit. Talk to your friends. Talk to your father. And leave it with him. And go on your way to victory. Let's encourage one another. We're going to sing this song. Does Jesus care? He knows he does care. And if you're here and you're not a Christian, he cares for that. He wants you to be his disciple. If you'll come and confess your faith and be baptized today, you can become one. Or if you're here and you need someone to talk with, we're here to serve you, and the elders are here to serve you. Will you come while we stand and sing?